Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain it, what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rate of Trev Radio, episode 526, coming to you on Monday, December 18th. This was supposed to be our USC versus Louisville Holiday Bowl preview. It is no longer that because there's too much dang news to get to. Too many transfers. Transfers in, transfers out, new coach, former coach. A lot of stuff to get to here on this episode. So as always, you can follow us on Twitter, Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Email address, rainoftroy@fanside.com. Phone number, 818-643-7227, Suck It Whisperer and Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, generally with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Yeah, this was, like I said in the open, this was supposed to be the Holiday Bowl preview, and we've called an audible.
I feel like we may have to call an audible at different points during the show too, because news is coming thick and fast. There's every hour on the hour, there's something new, some new commitment, some new transfer portal entrance, some new transfer commitment, some new coach hired. It's just been a steady flow of news over the past few days, few weeks.
Right.
Literally just now, Dante Moore just committed to Oregon. So, you know, it's not just USC. It's everywhere. There's a lot going on in the transfer portal with recruiting and with bowl prep. So, yeah.
Yeah, things are happening super quickly. Like you said, you don't want to be asleep for any of this, which leads us to Sleeper. Sleeper Daily Fantasy. Have you heard about it? It's daily fantasy prop games. You can compete for a chance to win big cash prizes. The show is our sponsor, and the game is simple. For each contest, you're given a pool of props for upcoming games across different sports. You pick whether each prop will be over or under given the total. You can choose up to 8 different props for a chance at a bigger win. If you want to join in the action, we've got you covered. Sign up for the promo code FANSIDED2 today and receive a deposit match of up to $100 using the code FANSIDED2 when signing up. Not only gives you the great reward, but also directly supports this very podcast. So make sure you use that code FANSIDED2, or if you're watching us on YouTube, there's a QR code on the screen. Grab your iPhone, your Galaxy, whatever number, your Google Pixel, whatever you got, and take a little shot of the QR code and sign up to Sleeper right now. The offer, of course, are only available to customers who are 18 plus and physically present in valid states, including California. Please remember to always game responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. That's Sleeper Daily Fantasy. Alicia, one more thing before we get to the news. We got a new review.
Oh, did we?
We did. 5 stars from Hob to Beat. It says USC therapists. Fabulous pod that is therapeutic. Great chemistry and an in-depth knowledge about what's going on in the Trojan world and behind the scenes. I get to celebrate and commiserate virtually with this team. Thanks for all the joy you bring me. Keep up the great work. USC 91 and 95. It's a double major Trojan right there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that review. That's
double degree, I guess.
It's exactly the kind of review I love to see, to hear, to get validated. Love it.
Yeah. You know,
more of those reviews, guys. Like, we go through periods where people feel bad for us because someone gives us a bad review, and then we say, oh no, we got a bad review, and then we get like a few good reviews because everyone just feels bad for us for getting a bad review, and it's like, oh yeah, we got good reviews. And then we go like months without anything, and then randomly we get a 5-star review, and we go months, I stop checking before every episode, and then you surprise me with a 5-star review that just makes my day. It's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. You know how they have love languages, you know, acts of service, quality time, receiving gifts, physical touch, words of affirmation.
Yeah.
My podcast love language is positive reviews.
I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to love me as a podcaster, you'll leave a positive review. That'd really boost the ego. Negative ones are fine too, because, you know, I'm always taking feedback, but. You know, 5 stars helps grow the show and all those things. Leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. You can also leave a rating, I believe, on Spotify as well. So that helps. Absolutely. All right. There's a lot of stuff to get to. So let's get to the news, shall we?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
where to start? Let's start with the DB's coach. The Trojans have a new DB's coach. It is not Dante Williams. Dante Williams is gone, and he is off to Georgia. And in his place, the Trojans have hired ironically, someone from the SEC originally, Doug Belk, as the new DB's coach. He was the defensive coordinator at Houston from 2019 to 2023. He was the co-DC until 2021, also coached safeties. Houston's defense back in 2021 was 18th in SP Plus with him as the defensive coordinator. But they were not necessarily good defensively the last 2 years. Before that, a corners coach at West Virginia under defensive coordinator Tony Gibson. He was originally an Alabama GA. Nick Saban was asked about him back in 2022 and said this via ESPN, quote, "I tried to hire Belk a couple times. Haven't been able to hire him, but he did a great job when he was at Alabama, and he's having a great career. It doesn't surprise me at all. Both Alabama and Georgia offered Belk position coach jobs in 2021 per ESPN. He's considered a strong recruiter, connects with players, all that kind of stuff. That seems like a very good move for SC to get Doug Belk. So this means that SC gets a defensive coordinator and puts them at the DB's coach position. SC gets a head coach and puts them at the linebackers position. A national championship winning head coach, multinational championship winning head coach, and puts him at the defensive coordinator at the linebacker position. And they've got a defensive coordinator in Danton Lynn being the defensive coordinator. An anonymous person told us this week, I'm not used to SC having overqualified coaches, but here we are.
Yeah, that anonymous person basically said, "Is that the game plan? Just go and get a bunch of overqualified coaches to be the coaches."
Yeah,
that's what it feels like. We talked a lot about Matt Entz last week. Got to enjoy watching North Dakota State in the playoff on Saturday. They sadly lost in the overtime. It was a double heartbreaker, but they really fought hard. And that was good to see from them. And then USC turns around and makes this hire. And quite frankly, there'd been a lot of talk about which position coaches should be retained and which should not. And I have been out front the whole way. They should clean house. I think that I have suspicions about a couple of the coaches that are still remaining on staff who might still remain on staff. But I always felt that USC should clean house, including someone like Dante Williams, who is an incredible recruiter, but has not shown an ability to develop players to get the most out of the players that he gets to commit to him. And so, you know, I wish him all the best at Georgia. I think that is actually a perfect landing spot for him in a very scary sense for the rest of college football. Because there are certain programs and staffs where your deficiencies as a developer can be kind of hidden and your ability as a recruiter can really, really shine. And I think Georgia might be one of them. So I think Dante Williams ends up in a really good place. And I think USC ends up with a great hire with Doug Belk, who Alabama fans and Georgia fans really, really wanted. I did some digging on him, and the only bad thing you could say is that it just doesn't look like he was a very good defensive coordinator. He got a lot out of Houston's talent in 2021. And then a bunch of guys left for the NFL and things fell off very, very harshly. And Houston fans were very done with him as a defensive coordinator, but as a cornerbacks coach at West Virginia, he was extremely well-respected. They were distraught about losing him when he went over to Houston in the first place. So they respected him as a position coach and a recruiter. Nick Saban obviously has given his seal of approval on Belk as far as coaching is concerned. So feels like a huge hire for USC, actually. This is one to get really excited about because it's one where it feels like you might find that nice, happy medium of you're not sacrificing the recruiting element. you know, Belk has very, very strong ties in the Southeast and certainly in the Georgia area. There's a ton of talent coming out of those areas. He is clearly able to connect with players, with recruits, and be that level of guy, maybe not to the, you know, God tier degree that Dante Williams seems to be able to, but he's certainly no slouch as a recruiter. And also he has a very strong reputation for the way he practices, his philosophy defensively. And so, yeah, I'm very, very happy about this one.
Yeah, it's a big get for USC, absolutely. And as our friend Kenny said, it looks like SC won the race to Belk, which means they have won the Belk Bowl, which is great.
Yeah, I love all of the conversation about how all of USC's coaches on defense right now are all four letter names. It's Belk,
Lynn,
and Ence.
Yeah.
So if any additional hires are made, which I have to point out, literally as we were coming on, Chris Trevino was tweeting Lincoln Riley talking to the media today. And he said that the defensive staff is not finalized. They are still evaluating. So right now they have DC in place of Alex Grinch. They have linebackers coach in place of Brian Odom. They have DB's coach in place of Dante Williams. The holdovers are Sean Nua on defensive line and Roy Manning on outside linebackers. I believe that's it, right? Both of those guys have been very active in the recruiting leading up to signing day. I wouldn't be surprised if either of them remained on the staff, given Roy Manning's connections to Lincoln Riley, given Sean Nua's, I suppose he has less of the Grinch stink on him because he was brought in from outside.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that Riley admitted that they're still evaluating and that additional guys could be brought in. And based on the way that they've made the three hires that they've made, you have to feel good that if Lincoln Riley is going to replace Sean Nua, if he's going to replace Roy Manning, that they're going to be swinging for the fences to do so. I'm very interested to see how that all plays out. But for right now, you know, as HR Pickenstuff points out in the chat, like Sean Nua is out recruiting right now. Like, yeah, there is Sean Nua and Roy Manning have both been out very active in recruiting. But we'll see, will the dominoes fall, after signing day, after the new year.
Yeah, we will see indeed. I want to give a big shout out to Fighting On MC, who gave us a super chat. Merry Christmas, Alicia and Michael. Thank you. Merry Christmas to you as well. All right, before we get into a lot of the recruiting talk, signing day, early signing day coming up on Wednesday, let's talk about the transfer portal. It is getting absolutely nuts. The Trojans got a double commitment from a pair of beefs. Akili Arnold's, all Pac-12 honorable mention at safety, and then all Pac-12 first teamer at linebacker, Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. Both from the Beavers. We know that the Beavers are essentially getting relegated in college football this year, and it sucks. And there's been sort of a mass exodus from the Beavs because of that. Jonathan Smith, head coach, moves on to Michigan State. Bray stays as the defensive coordinator, but the Trojans swoop in to get Akili Arnold and Mascarenhas Arnold. How big of a get is this? I think that, you know, you talk about guys going out and getting linebackers, right? Because the linebackers have been the issue for the Trojans. It was a point of emphasis last year as he went out and got Mason Cobb from Oklahoma State, but did it work? Not really. The linebackers were still a major flaw of the defense. And maybe that was just the major flaw of the Alex Grinch defense. Nonetheless, it looks like that could be a huge position of emphasis by getting these two dudes.
Yeah. I love this. I love this duo coming to USC. At positions that USC absolutely needs help and needs quality help. And these guys are quality.
Yeah.
Easton Mascarenhas Arnold was a all Pac-12 first team linebacker. USC needs linebackers like they couldn't believe. Akili Arnold was an all Pac-12 honorable mention, but I'd like to point out that and take it for what it's worth. It's Pro Football Focus, but he was the third rated Pro Football Focus player for Oregon State with an 80 rating. 80 is a hell of a lot higher than anybody at USC got this year.
Yeah.
So he was obviously doing something good with them. Both of them maybe have a higher than you'd like to see missed tackle percentage, but at a certain point, you just see a lot of guys missing tackles, and in the sense that like everybody is missing tackles all the time, you just sort of pay attention to it more when it's your team doing it. And that's not to say that USC didn't have a ridiculous number of missed tackles. Way more than anybody else that needs to get cut down on. But this is sort of proof. The two of them are proof that you can have guys missing a tackle or two occasionally, and they can still be really good players. The problem is that USC had guys who were missing tackles all the time, and also were not making plays in coverage or in run defense or anything like that. And you can see from both of the stepbrothers that they get the job done defensively, playing for a coach in Trent Bray, who just got promoted to be a head coach. And we can hope that that they come into USC and fit into what Danton Lynn and the rest of the guys want to do defensively. But we know they worked at Oregon State. There's no reason they can't come and work at USC as well in positions of major need.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fascinated to see how this all comes to be, especially at safety, where we don't know what the word is with Kalen Bullock, if he's coming back next year. We know the Trojans are in the mix for a transfer portal safety out of UCLA, Ramsey. What is happening at safety? I don't know. It's going to be an interesting sort of thing, how that gets put together. Obviously, a good problem to have if it does all come in together for the Trojans, because SC needs talent on defense. You want to just keep building upon that. But they are losing guys on defense, including a long list of dudes headlined on defense by Damani Jackson, 5-star corner into the transfer portal, Fabian Ross into the transfer portal, and then Tackett Curtis, freshman linebacker, who had an up and down season for SC, started the first game, started a lot really for the Trojans all season, but not in the transfer portal, according to Chris Trevino of USCfootball.com. But Chris tweets, "I have confirmed freshman linebacker Tackett Curtis is not in the transfer portal as of right now, but the smoke around his departure, first recorded by Fardon Rusty, is real." So by the time you read this, maybe he will be.
I mean, by the time you finish reading that out, there was a tweet from Matt Zenitz minutes ago that said that USC freshman linebacker Tackett Curtis has entered the portal.
Well, there you go.
Him and Chris Hummer. So I don't know. Tackett tweeted something of a highlight package of himself from USC.
I don't mean to be to pee in anyone's Cheerios here, but he used the targeting hit from the San Jose State game in the highlight package. I get it. You want to have a big hit in there, but like maybe not that one.
The NFL is already getting ready to suspend him for that kind of making those kinds of hits. If you guys follow the NFL, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I took the tweet from Tackett to mean that like year one was in the books and this was his highlight package, and just so happens that he's wearing a USC jersey while doing it.
Right.
He was, Brian Odom brought him in, and now Brian Odom is gone, and Tackett would appear all the signs point towards him being in the portal or going to be in the portal. And that is a bummer, along with guys like Damani Jackson. That's along with guys like Malachi Nelson. You don't want to see these guys enter the portal when they had so much potential.
Right.
But I think that they all, though, that trio is a really interesting trio of a good example of how you really, in this day and age, you really have to sit back and let the portal sort itself out,
mm-hmm.
and not panic especially when players who were not living up to their potential go into the portal after a new staff is brought in.
Right.
Yeah. Or new, there's a new shakeup at their position group. Like for Malachi Nelson, USC is heavily in the mix for transfer quarterbacks. And we're seeing around the country, young quarterbacks are just going into the portal to get their opportunities to start if they know that they're not going to have an opportunity out front to start. So Malachi Nelson leaving shouldn't surprise anybody or cause panic.
Let's get to the offense there because, okay. Yeah, on offense, the transfer departures, I think, are huge names. Malachi Nelson, the five-star quarterback out of LaSalle. Mario Williams, who was supposed to be the guy at wide receiver this past season, him and Dorian Singer, and neither one of them had standout years for SC, but Mario Williams is the one who hits the transfer portal. He came with Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams from OU 2 years ago, of course, and then two offensive linemen, Michael Tarquin, who started this year, and then Andrew Millick, who's just sort of been a reserve lineman for like 9 years. It feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah. And again, these are all, I think that when I look at the guys who are in the portal, I will only start to panic or get worried when I can't find a good reason for why they're in the portal. Or when I think that the decision that they're making feels like a giant mistake. For guys like Andrew Millick, Fabian Ross, there's every chance they are being processed. There's every chance they understand they're just going to have to go somewhere else to try to find an ability to play. For someone like Michael Tarquin, it was pretty clear that his fit on the offensive line maybe wasn't a match made in heaven. He was a big part of the shuffling that USC was doing on the offensive line, moving guys inside and out and sort of trying to figure out. I would have preferred him to stay because, as we've talked about a lot, having continuity on your offensive line matters a lot, and getting year two out of Tarquin would have been something I was very interested in seeing. But it's, you know, he's going to go make his way. I think I of all of the departures, to me, Tarquin's probably the biggest, just because continuity on your offensive line,
starting experience,
all of that kind of stuff like that. That is something that is very, very difficult to replace. And now if you're going to bring in another offensive lineman in the portal, you're starting from scratch on them, and you might run into the same problems you did with Michael Tarquin. So like, he's an actual one that feels like I really wish USC could reverse that decision. But like, yeah. Mario Williams, it's like, you know, he followed Caleb Williams to USC. Caleb Williams is now gone. He was not a game changer or difference maker this past season. And, you know, depth is certainly a concern, but it feels like USC can probably find somebody to fill that role. In terms of what Mario Williams was bringing to the table for this year, that feels replaceable. Like I said, Malachi Nelson, I'm just not going to stress freshmen who leave when they weren't going to start this year anyways, in the coming year anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at guys like Damani Jackson and Tacky Curtis, who, like I was saying before, huge potential. The results on the field this past year were very poor. There's no way around it. Both of them were, I would argue, two of the worst regular starters for USC in a field of very, very poor play from the majority of USC's regular starters on defense.
Yeah.
And I would have loved for both of them to stick around to see what a new staff could have transformed them into.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they're not going to stick around to see that. And I don't think it's a surprise that USC has lost two defensive coaches, and the primary recruiter for Damani Jackson, Dante Williams, and the primary recruiter for Tacky Curtis, Brian Odom, and that both of those players are now intending to leave the program. That's just part of the question. So I guess the thing that for USC fans I would say is, before you start to panic over any of these departures, ask yourself, what is more important? keeping Damani Jackson or Tackett Curtis or getting rid of Dante Williams and Brian Odom. To me, I know for sure I will accept the ripple effect of losing players that I would have liked to see get a chance.
Yeah.
At the cost of the very necessary changes USC had to make to the staff. So that's my long-winded way of saying, like,
yeah,
I'm not too bothered about any of these at this point because the portal's going to portal.
Portal's going to portal. Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, wide receiver is an interesting spot because I look at it two ways. On one hand, that was a position where SC, I think, can absolutely needs an influx of talent somewhere, needs a spark. This past season, we know that Taj Washington is gone. Brendan Rice is gone. Now Mario Williams is transferring. Dorian Singer still has eligibility. So assuming that he stays, you got Dorian Singer, Deuce Robinson, Zachariah Branch. Michael Jackson III is gone. So I guess you got Kyron Hudson, Jacoby Lane, Makai Lemon. Like, and those guys have been, you know, got to time at DB late in the season. So, like, I don't know. Like, it's an interesting spot. Like, you obviously want to keep Mario Williams because you saw the glimpses of what he could be 2 years ago, or I guess last year, right? Mm-hmm. But he wasn't that guy this past season. He just wasn't. And you have to imagine that with SC being able to bring in freshmen this upcoming, freshmen on a new wave of freshmen in the 2024 class starting on Wednesday, that's going to be a way to sort of replenish the wide receivers, plus any ability to go out and still get a transfer as the transfer portal keeps going on. Quarterback's an interesting spot because I think Malachi Nelson, at first, whenever you hear a five-star quarterback going into the transfer portal, it sounds concerning. Absolutely. But I further emphasize the one area where you can stand and pledge undying loyalty to Lincoln Riley is at quarterback. If Lincoln Riley has a plan, and we know that, you know, Will Howard is someone who's been projected to ultimately commit to USC as the transfer from Kansas State, he doesn't have much eligibility, but, you know, moving forward, SC still has, options later on down the line. Miller Moss is someone who says that he's going to be at USC no matter what. I would just trust the entire process here. The comments that Lincoln Riley put out about Malachi Nelson a few weeks ago weren't overly encouraging. Talking about how it was a struggle this past year, in part due to injury, for Nelson, and he didn't really have a year for him to be able to develop well. I didn't take that as a knock on Nelson as a person, but more so like it was difficult with his health and whatnot. Right. So if a change is what's needed for him, and you have Lincoln Riley, who is the quarterback whisperer in college football, a proven quarterback whisperer for years and years and years now, several quarterbacks over. Even if it sounds scary to lose a five-star quarterback, this is what the transfer portal era is, right? Five-star quarterbacks come and go all the time now.
From every program, top to bottom. Nobody's five-star quarterback is safe. You look at, in fact, the last couple of years, you look at like the recruiting rankings coming out of high school and look at where each quarterback was when they signed and where they are now. Like, it's extremely rare to find any of those top quarterbacks in the same spot that they that they signed. That's just the nature of the beast. And you have to live within the system that you're presented.
Yeah.
So the way I see it is that Riley's comments were very telling that Nelson wasn't going to be heavily involved in the competition to start. And that him sticking around to me would have just signaled that he was willing to wait. And him leaving just tells me he's just not willing to wait, which is his prerogative. And that's something you also have to expect from players as well. You can't expect them all to wait.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting what happens going forward, because in 2026, we know that Juju Lewis is their quarterback, right? But 2026 is a long time from now. That's two more seasons. A lot can change. Absolutely, a lot can change. So we'll see what the Trojans can do there. Let's talk about commitments. SC got a quartet of commitments in the past week. Three-star defensive lineman Jide Abasire, three-star outside linebacker Lorenzo Cowan, three-star offensive lineman Kalolo Taaga, and four-star defensive lineman Carlin Jones. Any thoughts there going into Saturday?
The big one is the newest one, Carlin Jones, four-star defensive lineman. I mean, just Jide Abasire is a
great name, by the way.
It's a great name, Jide Abasire. It's so fun to say. I hope I'm saying it right, because the way I'm saying it is so fun to say it right. But he looks like a really good prospect. He looks like somebody who has a very good frame to work with, but needs some time to develop. So it's going to be a little bit more of a process with him. But Carlin Jones has the body of a dude who's already playing college football.
Yeah.
And he's coming out of Texas. You gotta like the look of that. And this is the kind of defensive lineman that USC needs to stock the line with. And then same with like Kalolo Taaga. It feels like another offensive lineman with just the big frame to work with that you can develop into somebody who's an absolute monster. You gotta give him time. This is why you have to keep stocking up the offensive line. But Chris Trevino pointed out that Josh Henson has already brought in more offensive linemen in the last two recruiting cycles than the previous four under the previous regime. So they are doing work to restock the cabinet that was extremely bare. Mm-hmm. And the guys that they've brought in have all had very high potential, just need time to develop and need the chance to develop. So I like everybody that USC's brought in. They're all guys that you can see the possibilities with, but you also have to wait, and you need to be able to develop these guys. So whether they're three stars or five stars, the problem that USC has had is that they're not developing any of
develop. Yeah. It's one of those weird things, because obviously stars matter. 1000% stars matter. Like, that's your ability to, you know, go out and win a championship. I firmly believe that the blue chip ratio is a thing, right? Like, stars matter 100%. At the same time, I think what SC's biggest problem is not getting the most out of the talent they have, both in terms of developing their three-star talent and maximizing their four and five-star talent. We know that SC can get four and five-star guys because they've had plenty of those dudes over the years. And while it might not be as many as you've hoped, the ones that they've gotten haven't necessarily done much. Like Jamani Jackson are a prime example, right? Like, you get Jamani Jackson and you're hoping he's going to have an impact just like Adoree Jackson. And he hasn't. And just the number of guys that SC has gotten, particularly on defense, that just hasn't been that way. So first and foremost, I think you just need to develop more than anything. You just develop the talent that you do have. You're going to be significantly better.
Well, just think,
moving forward.
Think about this. Oregon State is not a recruiting juggernaut.
No,
they're not getting even four-star guys regularly.
But their defense is way better than
their
SC's.
Their defense is perfectly compatible to winning football games.
Yeah.
With three-star talent, with two-star talent in a lot of cases. Like, it's because they develop, because they have a system that they recruit to, that they bring guys up and learn their system. They coach them well. They apply well. They game plan well. They scheme well. All of those things.
Yeah.
They practice well. Like, now, to win a national title, you need to marry the the 5-4 stars with all of that development and stuff like that. But right. where USC is at right now, you have to build this thing back up.
You got to learn to walk first.
Yes.
And that, it sounds damning, but like, that's just the position SC's in defensively, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah,
it unfortunately is. All right, let's get to comments we've got in the chat, questions that we got in the chat, and open up the mailbag.
You've got mail.
HR Pickenstuff says, Alicia or Michael, can you recall another coach that was so good at recruiting and bad at coaching? The name I come up with is Willie Taggart. I think this is in reference to Dante Williams, who is an elite recruiter, brought in guys like Damani Jackson, but... I think the coaching has left a lot to be desired. Look at USC's lack of ability to cover the last couple of years, right? Damani Jackson's a prime example of that, right? Like the lack of development there. So the first thing that comes up to me, comes up to mind for me, my brain just went blank. The defensive coordinator at Oregon right now.
Tosh Lupoy. Yeah, Tosh Lupoy. That's his reputation. His reputation is being extremely good at recruiting, at connecting.
Yeah.
But being a questionable coach. Kenny in the chat saying Mario Cristobal.
Andy Enfield.
Absolutely. Hokie P brings up T. Martin. I think that T. Martin was a great recruiter. He was an perfectly adequate wide receivers coach. He was just a bad offensive coordinator. Like, I think there's a difference between being a bad coordinator and I think USC's receivers.
Isn't he in the NFL as a receivers coach?
I think he might be. Was he with the Ravens?
I'm looking it up.
Either way, I think he was a perfectly fine receivers coach. I didn't really have a lot of complaints about the development of USC's star receivers that they.
He's the QB's coach for the Ravens.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
He's helping Lamar Jackson work towards an MVP season. So he's doing an okay job there. I think Tosh Lupoy is definitely the big example. I would argue that Clay Helton fits that mold as well. Clay Helton convinced a hell of a lot of parents and a hell of a lot of kids to buy into him and to be extremely loyal to him. And he was just never a particularly good coach.
I'm going to push back on that.
You don't think Clay Helton inspired a lot of loyalty and
like he did, but also the spirit of this question is in the extremes.
That's true. He wasn't like a 5-star recruiter.
No, and I would argue that literally anybody who's wearing a USC polo can recruit at a decent level and get 5-star talent.
That's fair.
Like any of them, like Hackett got elite talent, right? Like Hackett went out and got Carson Palmer, even though Carson Palmer, I guess, did he commit to Robinson at the end? Either way, like Hackett got, you know, elite guys who had talented players who he just couldn't get anything out of them. Helton got some of those guys, but like not enough of them. Absolutely not enough of those guys.
That's fair.
To call him an elite recruiter. In the spirit of Dante Williams, who is an elite recruiter, Tosh Lupoy, an elite recruiter, T. Martin, an elite recruiter, Mario Cristobal, an elite recruiter. Yeah. Steve Sarkisian, I don't know that he fits in this sense, because I don't know that a head coach kind of fits in general for me, but I get it.
Yeah.
Also, he's in the playoff now, so I don't know how that completely translates there. Let's get to an email we got from John in Oakland. Alicia and Michael, as we enter the postseason/bowl season, the USC football heads to the Big Ten. I had a thought on the future of college football, of the college football playoff. It's so long, so feel free to summarize this email. The CFP faces an interesting future as it moves into deciding what to do after the current TV revenue agreement that expands to a 12-team playoff ends in after the 2025 season. A new media/TV deal for a 12-team playoff will need to be found, and it's expected to go from $450 million a year to $2 billion. The current revenue split is the Power Five conferences get 71.5%, the Group of Five conferences 27%, Notre Dame 1%, and other FBS independents 0.5%. 10 FBS conferences and Notre Dame own the CFP, and the university president CEO voting block would seem to be the Power Five plus Notre Dame, which is 6 votes, versus the Group of Five, which is 5 votes. However, the Pac-12 merges with the Mountain West or is able to add 6 schools to remain a viable separate conference. The university president CEO control of the CFP would either be a 5-5 tie or an outright shift to the Group of Five as it becomes the Group of Six. If it's the latter, do you think the Group of Six tries to move to a more equal sharing of the CFP revenue for 2025? Let's say the Power Four conferences 52%, Group of Six conferences 45%, Notre Dame 2%, and other FBS independents 1%. So, for example, the Big Ten would go from $64 million to $260 million a year, and the Mountain West goes from $24 million to $150 million a year. Would this make the FBS better across the 130-plus schools, or do you think this is when the Power Four breaks off to set up a new CFP without the Group of Six? Thoughts? Fight on, John in Oakland.
I thank you for the email, John. I think this is all really complex stuff that is hard to figure out because there's still a lot of things that are being juggled right now. I was reading up a little bit on the court case right now where USC is being sued. They're trying to claim that USC athletes are employees and USC, the Pac-12 and NCAA are having to fight back about that. And there's legislation in Congress that is, or in legislatures around the country that are trying to come to a point of revenue sharing with players. There's a lot of money stuff that is heavily going to weigh on how this all gets divided, not just the sort of deadline of 2025, like NIL, revenue sharing with players, all of the realignment stuff, the TV money in general, all of these questions are all swirling together into a giant stew of who the heck knows what college football is going to look like in 2025, beyond just the revenue share for the playoff. I'm certain that the Group of Six or whatever it becomes will be pushing for a greater revenue share. I think the more they push, the more likely we are to see the Power Five or whatever it becomes push back on that. I think it will be very interesting to see what the first year of the expanded playoff looks like and how much leverage the Group of Six is able to generate with their potential performance in an expanded playoff, or if it will feed into the idea that the Power Four, whatever it becomes, shouldn't even pay mind to those quote unquote, lesser conferences because they're not actually going to be competitive in that field of 12. So I think there's a million things that still need to shift and come together and sort out before we can say anything about how much money anybody's going to be making in 2025 or beyond.
Yeah. It's fascinating when you look at it. Cause does the Pac-12 dissolve? Does it just be merged with the Mountain West? And then that essentially is the Pac-12 dissolving, right? Like, is it this or is it that? Like, so much of this sounds like gerrymandering in a bit of a way, right? Like, the see who gets the voting power of all these things. No matter what, I think that this is college football, which means that the solution that would make the most sense is not going to happen. If we just came up with a solution right now, that would just make the most logical sense for the game of football, it would not work, probably legally. It wouldn't work because maybe the NCAA would step in, or some state legislation would step in somewhere, or some school would not agree, or maybe it would be something where the players wouldn't end up not agreeing and then having the power to do something about that legal. I don't know. Whatever it is, the perfect scenario for what makes sense for the football game itself is never going to coexist with what makes sense for all of the powers that be. And I think that's what's frustrating about this sport and makes it forever flawed. It's a lot like soccer in the world, FIFA, and how all the things that sort of make sense never happen because FIFA's the greedy bastard who just has to get in there and ruin everything. It's wild, but like we can say that college football would sort of be better with an actual center, centralized power force that is able to control things. But like, then do you end up with the FIFA of college football that, you know, ruins things that way? I don't know. Like it's such a weird power. All this stuff is such a weird power struggle to the point where like, I have a hard time. Like I end up just feeling apathetic about so much of it. You know, like is that lame? Like
that's where I'm at a place where I don't know that apathy is the way that I would describe it personally. It's an acceptance that I have no control over the things that are going on with college football. And so I'm not going to stress about them because it's going to become what it's going to become. And I'm either going to be along for the ride and it's going to work out, or it's going to break the system and I'm going to find something else to get interested in.
But that's not going to happen though,
because this is my argument. It's like, everyone's like, oh no, NIL, oh no, transfer portal. It's like, yeah, NIL and transfer portal has changed the way that I consume college football. But there's still a million things about college football that I love that keep me there. And I get used to the other things and I just sort of don't let them bother me. The playoff expanding, like, I think the 12-team playoff is going to be really damn fun. I'm super excited about it. I think it's ultimately for the best that players get paid, get a part of the massive billion-dollar revenue that this industry produces, and that they get paid. But them getting paid, them being employees, will change the fabric of college football in a way that makes it considerably different from the way it was when I was growing up. But different doesn't have to be worse, and it might not be better, but it also doesn't have to be broken to a point that I can't possibly follow college football anymore. Like, that is all sort of part of the way that things are going to fall. And that's the way I see like the transfer portal and all this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I'm with everybody who says that it's hard to get invested in players when they just enter the portal after a year because they don't get playing time as a freshman. And you're like, well, you know, sit and develop and learn and give yourself a chance to do something great here. And sort of more rare to see that happening. And that sucks. And that sort of changes the way that I consume the game. But at the same time, like, I freaking love Marshawn Lloyd and I love Travis Dye and I love, you know, Stevie Tuikolobatu, and like the transfer, there are transfers that USC has brought in that have made my life as a sports fan better. And you sort of find different areas that are just, you know, doors opening, doors closing, all sorts of other things.
Yeah. The way I look at it is, yes, it can be pessimistic and all those things about like, you don't have power and it might be different, but different doesn't necessarily be worse, etc. The optimism, I think, and I think this is why I end up being apathetic about this more than anything, rather than say just strictly pessimistic, is that the unfortunate reality is we're talking about USC football. USC football, as much as you can complain about SC's lack of ability to throw their weight around like Alabama or Ohio State or whatever, the reality is USC is USC. USC is in the Big Ten currently. They are not in a position to get shafted like an Oregon State or Washington State. And it sucks that Oregon State and Washington State are getting relegated, right? Like, that is horrible. And it sucks to, and if you're an Oregon State or Washington State fan, I can't imagine the frustration and the anger and all those things that you feel right now. But if you're a USC fan, the awkwardness is that you don't have to worry about that. That is weirdly comforting in itself. Like, you're, if there is this massive landscape change, SC is not going to be one of the ones, the schools that get screwed here. You know what I mean? If La Liga is changing, Real Madrid's not going to be the one on the outside looking in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's not how it's going to work. Right. And then the flip side about this is all these things that we're talking about are all the things that happened to college basketball 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the college basketball game has been damaged the last 15 to 20 years in that it used to be that I think all the household names, household players, I mean, the best players were household names, right? And the way it is now, unless you're literally watching every single week, who can name who plays for Duke now? I can't. I don't watch enough to know, right? Like, there's the one and dones, and there's so many transfers, and all those things change. But I don't think that that same thing can happen to college football when there's still the 3 years of eligibility thing. People need to still be around.
Which, by the way, the big difference here is that the NBA wanted the younger players in.
Yes.
The NFL
doesn't want
players who are 21 years old.
They want the free development.
Yes.
And it's in everybody's best interest still for college football to exist in the way that it does as a feeder to the NFL, because the NFL is not going to want to pay to have their replacement of college football. You know what I mean? Like that's not going to change things that way. So
yeah.
Let's get to an email from Tony in Denora, PA. Alicia and Michael, this is Tony from Denora, PA. I've never been into the hiring of a coach on any of my teams more than I am about this one. Danton Ents, Doug Belk, now hired as the new DB coach. I guess Belichick will come on board as the defensive line coach. Fight on. Like we were saying, like it's weird. Like SC is like finding guys who are overqualified all of a sudden.
Hey, that would be pretty funny. That would be pretty damn funny if Bill Belichick ended up anywhere near the USC program. But yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited for with this staff. And I put this on Twitter, like with all part of my zenness about the portal stuff is I'm excited to see what this staff does with the guys who want to be at USC. And I trust that there will be enough guys that want to be at USC for the build to continue on.
Yeah. Speaking of guys who want to be at USC, Daniel in the chat says, what do you guys think about Lincoln Riley's press conference today, where he stated that his recruiting is shifting towards guys that want to be Trojans only and bleed Cardinal and gold like 15 years ago?
I'm going to be really honest because I haven't seen the exact quotes, but my read on the question and the framing and all of that is that that's coach speak.
Yeah, I think there's subtext there.
There's always, coaches will always say that they want guys who want to be there. They're always sending their signals of the kinds of players that they want. And I think that I think there is an idea around the effort you put into recruiting or the investment that you put into recruiting. You are best off with finding guys who are coming to USC, not specifically because of a coach or not specifically because of an NIL deal, but because they see the value of the university. Because when it comes down to it, the guys like Miller Moss are going to be rare, but the guys like Miller Moss are invaluable because you have guys who are there because they want to be at USC, because they want a degree from USC, because they love Los Angeles, because they want to wear Cardinal and gold, and sort of all of the things that are beyond the sort of are the almost, I would say, the barriers between a player and just jumping into the portal at the first chance are there. And I think there's an argument for sure to be targeting as many players as possible who fit that mold, knowing that half of the dudes you recruit are going to just leave, and you're going to have to go out and recruit guys in the transfer portal to come in anyways. So the more loyalty points you can sort of invest in, that doesn't feel like a losing strategy to me. But as with all things, you have to find a balance, because you don't want to let guys go just because they don't necessarily fit that mold of he's going to be super loyal to USC. And you might also be very wrong about your assumption about whether or not a guy will be super, super loyal to you. I think you should view those, what I'll call loyalty points, as like a cherry on top when evaluating a prospect and when deciding how much you're going to focus on whether or not you can get them.
Yeah. Logan in the chat says, it's another way of telling the fan base we aren't getting the five-star and high four-star kids.
I don't think that's the case.
But I do think that there's a way of saying, like, of laying down the foundation coach speak wise of we want guys who want to be here and blah, blah, blah. And like, that's going to be your sort of talking points. But the reality is you want guys who are good. Like, if you go out and get a transfer with 1 year of eligibility and they've got a UCLA logo tattooed on their forehead, but they're transferring to you for one last final season and they're a good player, who gives a shit?
So
put the guy on the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's the reality of the situation. Like I don't think the fans will care. I don't think anybody will care if you go out and make the tackle and make the play. Like that's what the bottom line is. And this is why, like, there's part of me that, yes, you want SC to go out and get all the five-star talent and all that stuff. But like, there's part of me that is so scorned with SC's lack of ability to do anything, or lack of ability to develop on defense, especially, where I'm like, okay, if you can assign the 3-star guys, and this is the coach speak to say that you're just going to get 3-star guys who just want to be here. Okay. But like, make good on that then. Right. Like,
no, hold on. Cause I found a part of the quote and I want to change our framing around this though, because the quote to me doesn't, I mean, it's not the full quote, but he said, you want to have guys who are hungry to get on the field right away, but also guys that have a mind to be developed and a good sense of reality.
Right.
Like, to me, that's exactly what you should be. That's, you want to bring in players who understand the value of and importance of developing, of who want to be competitive enough to want to play right away, but also understand that jumping in the portal every other year is not conducive to getting to the ultimate promised land of the NFL, who have a good head on their shoulders and understand not to make rash decisions that are based on emotion or based on whatever. Like, I think the idea of paying attention to the mentality of the players that you are recruiting is a huge part of recruiting well. And like, I don't think anything that I've seen from Riley on this topic makes me think that he's looking at this the wrong way. But everybody's also doing coach speak half the time, so you also have to pay attention.
A lot of this is idyllic in a lot of ways of like, obviously, like, okay, well, what type of player do you want to have? Okay, yeah, you want someone who's fast, you want someone who's strong, someone who's smart, someone who's got drive, someone who wants to be here, someone who is a good teammate and a positive role model in the community. And but like, obviously, like, that's what you ideally want. The reality is you usually have to settle for 4 of the 6 things, right? Like, just because.
And that's why that you all, it's always about finding a balance between the guys that fit the mentality mold and the can't miss prospects that you hope to. But this is also why it's so important for, this is why I'm also telling fans to calm and understand that it takes time to set a culture, to create a culture, to to rebuild a situation, and that a big part of having success with the, you know, the five-star guy who maybe doesn't fit the exact mentality that you hope to have, you take that five-star guy and you put him in a room with 80 players who do have that mentality, it rubs off.
Right.
And it's good. It's a good way to culture is a really good way to get into that state.
But
it takes time and it takes getting it right. And that's the thing that I think that's the biggest challenge I have for Riley and for this staff is, like, I think they're saying the right things as far as I know. It's about getting it right. It's about getting,
yeah, it
making the right call. Like, is it going to turn out to be the right call to let Malachi Nelson go and to bring in somebody like Will Howard or whoever it is that they land? Like, they just, I understand the mentality. I understand the mindset. You just have to have gotten it right.
Yeah. And this is why I almost don't care what is said in the sort of a press conference like this, because even if you are saying the right things, it doesn't matter if the, like, you're only going to be judged by the results, right? Like, you can say the same thing a year from now and get positive results and people love what you say. And you can say the same thing a year from now and have no results and people hate what you say,
yeah,
right? Like, so much of it comes down to, what are you doing on the field? What have you done for me lately, et cetera? And, you know, the flip side is, I agree with you that it takes time to, like, build culture and all this stuff. But, like, A, SC doesn't have a lot of time here because you're going into year three, and the hot seat will start to develop if there is no improvement, especially defensively. Number two, we literally just talked about Danton Lynn's whole thing was that he walked into a UCLA defense that was in shambles.
No, but I'm talking about.
You're talking about the long game about
game of recruiting philosophy.
Sure. Like, I get that.
And Dave P in the chat asks, you talk about how it takes time for culture, but what about Lanning and DeBoer? It seems culture is pretty good. Lanning and DeBoer took over programs that were run by Chris Peterson for a decade. It was a Chris Peterson program for a decade. And an Oregon program that has been at the top of the Pac-12 or near it for the last decade too. Like, the situations that Dan Lanning and Kalen DeBoer took over could not have been more different than the situation that Lincoln Riley took over at USC. That's my perspective. Now, I think Kalen DeBoer especially has done an amazing job with getting Washington into a position to be in the college football playoff this year. But to me, the task at USC was much more difficult than what either of those coaches inherited.
Yeah. All right. Ron Murdy says, is the wall around LA that Pete Carroll built gone with the transfer portal? No, I don't think it's gone with the transfer portal. I think it was gone before then.
It's gone with 10 years of mediocrity.
Yeah. Even before the transfer portal existed, like, Oklahoma was coming in and getting guys. Alabama was coming in and getting guys. Notre Dame was coming in and getting guys. Clemson was coming in and getting guys. I think when you look at quarterbacks, Southern California produces too many quarterbacks that everybody is going to come in and get somebody. You can't. SC couldn't realistically have gotten. Yes, you can say that. Oh, well, they were in for CJ Stroud at one point, and oh, well, they didn't really go after Jaden Daniels as much as they could have. Blah blah blah. Yeah, but they were after JT Daniels, and they got Caleb Williams as the trans. Like, there's almost just there's too many guys at quarterback. And it's not just about quarterback. It's about the other positions too here. The linemen at those schools are being pursued everywhere else too, but it's not just the transfer portal. I think the problem there is Pete Carroll is 15 years removed now, which sounds crazy, but that's like we're old.
Yeah.
Like, it's a long time ago, and SC has not done anything in the last 15 years to rebuild and re-strengthen that that wall around those programs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Last question from Dave P. Instead of complaining about the college football world and how it is, should you be complaining that USC isn't adapting? It seems like the majority of schools have adapted except for USC.
I mean, I would flat out reject the idea that the majority of schools feel like they've adapted. I can tell you that I cover college football at large, and Georgia fans complain, and Alabama fans complain, and Ohio State fans complain, and Michigan fans complain, Florida fans complain, Nebraska fans complain, Oregon fans complain, Washington fans, like literally Texas, Oklahoma, everyone's fans are complaining that they are not doing enough to be at the forefront of NIL, of transfer portal, and of recruiting, because no one has this figured out and everyone's still trying. Like,
I don't think anyone knows what the rubric is for getting it right yet.
Yeah, because the NCAA hasn't set very strong, hasn't made it particularly clear what confines you can work within. What I will say is that I think for a long time, we talked about the Pete Carroll era. We bring up the anecdote that Ryan Abraham always shared about the strength and conditioning, like the facilities. USC was 10 years behind the facilities Cold War. The missile race or whatever with facilities. USC is playing catch up because USC spent so long living on its legacy and not recognizing that as an athletic department, that they needed to get on it. It was only within the last handful of years that USC started joining the arms race on staffers, on support staff. Like, it's not that this current regime to me is doing a hell of a job to get USC back into place. But before USC hired Lincoln Riley, when the discussion of whether or not USC was going to fire Clay Helton, move on from Clay Helton, my biggest anxiety was that USC was not going to be able to attract a top name as a head coach, specifically because the previous athletic directors had done such a poor job of setting up the athletic department and by proxy, the football program to be up in the upper echelon of being managed, just to being a well-oiled machine. USC has not had a well-oiled athletic department in my lifetime, essentially. Well, and Mike Bone, Brandon Sosna, did a hell of a job of turning that around as quickly as possible to start chipping away at all of those deficiencies that USC has.
Can I put on my Ryan hat really quick?
Yes.
Okay, here's my Ryan hat put on. Okay, so for a food analogy here, it was SC had a bunch of Hot Point appliances that you would get from an apartment complex in the kitchen, and they wanted to go out and get the guy from the Bear, right? But you can't get the guy from the Bear. What's the character's name from the Bear? The dude that I don't care for, the main character guy.
What's his name? I don't remember his name. The Jeremy something.
Yeah, the main character dude that's annoying. That not nearly as good as the other people. Yeah.
I love Sydney. That's me.
Sydney and Marcus are the best.
Yes.
You want to go out and get that guy right to run your restaurant, but SC had like off brand appliances, and Bone and Sosna, I think, in hindsight, were correct that, like, going out and getting, like, if they were going to replace their little cook, who was in this point Helton, with somebody, they were only going to go out and get the Bear if they remodeled the kitchen with elite, like, Bosch brands, stainless steel, everything. La Crusade, stuff everywhere. Like, you had to go out and get all those things. And SC sort of did that to get the Bear. The Bear was Lincoln Riley. But the problem is, it wasn't completely fixed, right? There's still other things to do. You still got to, it's still Mr. B.
You got to get rid of the mold in the ceiling. You still got to, you know, tear down the walls and fix your electrical and all, like, there's a million things that USC has to do. And I think this idea that USC, like, is Dave in the chat is saying that, that, like, they aren't adapting. I think that's, I don't know where that's coming from. Lincoln Riley is using the transfer portal. He clearly made the mistake with the with Alex Grinch and the defensive staff, but the hiring that he's been doing in that sense has all been on point. The question of how USC allocates its NIL money is a real question that I don't know the answer to, because number one, you have to have donors who are giving you all that money. You have to decide, are you going to, how much of that money are you going to waste on five stars who are going to transfer the next year if you don't pander to them and have them on the field in, you know, playing starting games when they are the worst player on the field half of the time, and like deciding that versus how much money are you going to throw at guys in the transfer portal? Are you going to hit with those guys in the transfer portal? Are you going to waste your money on guys in the transfer portal who come in and are the worst player on the field the other half of the time, Mason Cobb. And like you, there's a million things that, that you have to work around. USC was behind the eight ball on NIL because there was no, the athletic department was not all rowing in the same direction. The collectives weren't all rowing in the same direction. And now USC is having to fix all of that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to sit there and say that, like, Lincoln Riley is not adapting to a system that is literally changing by the month because the rules change by the month and the NCAA changes how they're gonna enact those rules by the month, and schools don't know what is legal and what is not in terms of NIL and collectives. There was a time when USC first started, they were doing their collective plus kind of stuff that felt like USC was doing it because they were trying to stay so far within the confines of compliance that they were not going out as far as other schools were, because USC had literally just gotten the equivalent of the death penalty that put them in this position in the first place. Did you want USC to be wild, wild west and being, you know, all over the place with the NIL dollars and all that kind of stuff? Like, yeah, USC might be in a better place today if they had gone full force there. But I can tell you 2 years ago, that's the last thing I wanted USC to do, to just go out there and say, okay, fine, we're just going to, you know, create a situation where bag men are just NIL men and we're just going to go crazy with it. And if the NCAA wants to destroy us again, let them do it. Like, no, I don't want, like, this is all insanity that USC is trying. It's a hurricane that USC is trying to build a house in the middle of. And to me, to my eyes, I don't know that they're doing the best job of anybody in college football, but like, I think it's weird to act like USC is somehow failing relative to everybody else who also is looking around saying, we don't know how the hell we're going to do this.
My only takeaway is, do you realize that when you do the cough bit, you don't actually have to say cough? You can just cough.
I know.
If you're typing it out, you can say cough. Like, yeah, like this is the Saving Silverman quote of, you don't have to do the walkie-talkies, already do. Okay.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, it's just.
All right. We'll wrap it up there. We'll be back Wednesday, 5 p.m. To preview USC and Louisville. Remember, don't use move your lips. Louisville. In the Holiday Bowl. Also, briefly, probably talk about signing day, which is on Wednesday, of course, as well. So, we'll be back Wednesday. Until then, we will see you. Merry Christmas, everybody. Hope you're having and enjoying your holidays. Hope you had a happy Hanukkah. I believe that's come to a close now. Whatever you celebrate, we hope you're having a good time. And we'll see you Wednesday. So until then, we will see you.
See ya.
See ya.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.